Every cloud has its silver lining, and it doesn't matter how down you are, there is always tomorrow.
You've got the concept and you've got the passion, but where do you go from here? Womenpreneur Strategies for Success is here to help you learn the exact tools, mindset shifts, and proven growth strategies to build the business you want while still having a life. You've got the will. Let us help you find the way. With your host, successful entrepreneur, Smita Singh.
Hello and welcome to Womenpreneur Strategies for Success podcast. Womenpreneur podcast is for you, my bold and fearless entrepreneurs, to take that next step in your life. Maybe you're hesitant to start your first business, or maybe you already have and want more people on your email list. Or maybe you have your six-figure business and want to elevate it to the next level. I have all the goods for you, my friends, and all I need from you is to take massive action. So, my friends, my bold and fearless entrepreneurs, how are you doing today? I am doing good. I feel a little crazy. I feel like my life is on fast track. I just have so much happening around me. Sometimes I can't tell one day from the other. It's a little bit crazy. So last week, my HuffPost article, which was titled Passion is Overrated and Not a Prerequisite for Success, was featured on the front page. It was amazing, the kind of exposure that it gave me. I've had so many people reach out to me from various walks of life, clients, amazing guests for the podcast. Just, you know, amazing things are happening, and I'm just so grateful. I'm grateful to all of you all that listen to the podcast and that email me. I get to talk to some of you on Skype and some of you I don't. But really, I think from all of this, one lesson that I've learned that I really want to tell you all is to be true, be authentic, be you. I think that's the most important thing. And that will truly catapult you to success. I had read a quote the other day, and please don't ask me who said it because I just would not remember, but it was great. It said, "You don't need to be accepted by others. You need to accept yourself." I mean, that really stuck to me. And now I'm just going to keep thinking about it because it's so important to be your authentic self, be true, give yourself permission to do what you're doing. And when you believe in yourself, I'm telling you, the doors will open up and there are so many things that are going to happen. It's amazing. The journey is amazing. And guys, just hop on. It's quite awesome. All right. So today I bring to you an amazing woman, Belinda Coker. Belinda is an international business consultant, an accomplished entrepreneur. She is a designer and an international marketer. And she's in Australia. She's the creator of a well-known brand, EnviroSax, eco-friendly, reusable shopping bag, seen on the arms of many celebrities around the world. Yes, you can Google EnviroSax and you'll see all kinds of celebrities carrying it. Belinda helps clients by sharing her valuable experience and knowledge in international production and overseas distribution. It's amazing, I think, what she does and what she's learned, she's now willing to share with her clients. She's such a darling, and I had such a fantastic conversation with her. So without further ado, let's get right into it with Belinda.
Hi, Belinda. How are you?
Hi, Smita. I'm wonderful. It's great to be on.
Absolutely. Well, welcome to our podcast. And I'm very excited you're in the other side of the world.
Yes, I am. And thank you so much for doing it so late in the day, Smita, because as we had a bit of an email discussion, I would have to have been in my pajamas otherwise. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. No problem. And you know, this is the first time I'm doing one in the evening and I kind of like it because I can just tell my husband, oh, go take care of the kids. Let me finish this. So it's kind of nice. But Belinda, for a lot of us that don't know you, let's start with getting to know you a little bit more. Tell us about yourself and tell us, you know, how and what are you doing and how you're such an amazing womanpreneur.
Well, I'm actually quite, if you saw me in the street, I'm just a plain, normal woman walking around probably with two pre-teenage girls, and I'm a mother of three. I have a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old, and nearly 18-year-old who's in his final year of high school. So I'm also the founder of a consulting company called Beluco Consulting, where I help people produce their items in China. And I'm also the founder of EnviroSax. And EnviroSax is a brand of reusable bags that I brought to America when I was in 2008. In 2008, they finally made their debut in the United States. And there's a little bit of a story associated with that. So,
wow, that's neat. You've been doing this for a while.
Yeah, I have. Nice.
And you know, I always ask my guests, what was your first ever job?
Okay, I actually looked at that question and I remember a funny job I had once when I was backpacking in the UK, and I had a job of picking daffodils in Wales.
Oh, nice.
But apart from that, my first real career job, I was actually a milliner. I used to hand stitch hats. Bespoke Millinery was actually the name of my company. And I used to make hats for the ladies who used to wear them to the races. And so they would bring in their outfit and they'd say, I'm wearing this, I'm wearing that. And I would create a hat for these ladies to wear to the races or to their wedding, mother of the bride, that sort of thing.
Wow. Hmm. So that means you've always been creative.
Yeah. I've always had the creative streak in it. And that'll probably come into the conversation later on about, well, why I do what I'm doing now, because even though it's not what I'm doing now, is actually helping people with their creativity.
So how did you start EnviroSax?
Well, when I started EnviroSax, I was in a bit of a bad place, and I'll expand on that in a moment, but this is when people often get their aha moments. I had a 3-month-old and an 18-month-old, and I was living a point in time. Money was pretty tight, and my husband was encouraging me to go back to work. And I had been working in the corporate job in the corporate arena, and I knew that if I went back to work, I'd be putting the children in daycare at 6 a.m. and picking them up just before they needed to basically go to bed, and I wouldn't see them. And I just knew that I really wasn't enjoying the idea. But I was also very overwhelmed having the two babies so close together. And I can remember just feeling so overwhelmed that I think it can probably be explained as postnatal depression. Anyway, so one night, and this is back in 2004. Now, back then, Australia had embraced the concept of reusable bags, but they'd embraced the concept of a reusable bag where they were the green polypropylene ones with the screen print on that you can get from supermarkets now. And I can remember just everyone had gone to bed and it was late one night. And I remember looking at these bags and I was just, and I got, gosh, they're ugly. You know, they're really ugly. You know, everything in my life right then was ugly, including these bags. And then for some reason, I just woke up the next day and I said, I know, I can put designs on these bags. And they really were all the rage, these polypropylene, you know, bags. They're the kind of bags that you would pick up at a trade show or something. They're kind of, you know, that material, that very cheap polypropylene. Yeah. And so I got to sort of, you know, make up a few designs. And then I worked out, well, these bags just kind of sit there because I never take them to the supermarket because I never remember them. And, you know, they're in the, you know, they're not in my bag. They're in the boot, in the trunk of the car or whatever. So I came to the idea that, okay, well, what if I created something that rolled up into a very small package and could be transported in your handbag? So I got to designing and, you know, and I had the sewing machine out and I made up some prototypes and I thought, right, these are great. I've got this great concept here. And then I thought, well, okay, I've got to put some designs on it. So I got together and I kind of went through this whole process of creating a bag which rolled onto a small package and had great designs on it. Of course, at that stage, I had no buyers. I had no buyers. I just had what I thought was a great concept. But doing that pulled me out of my depression. And it really was an aha moment. And if it's one thing that I've got to say to people is that every cloud has its silver lining, and it doesn't matter how down you are, there is always tomorrow. There really is. And it really happened for me. It was a bit of a journey, probably talking about 2 or 3 months. But once I ignited that passion in creating something, I had no idea it would become the world's largest or best-selling or most renowned reusable bag. I had no idea it would become that. I thought I could sell a few.
Man, that's
maybe,
awesome.
Maybe I could just, you know, I don't know, maybe I could have some parties and sell a few through parties or something like that. I had no idea how big this would get. Mm-hmm. But what happened, Smita, was that I basically came into a time where environmentalism was a new thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I know this sounds strange, but back in 2004, or between 2004 and 2008, in America, environmentalism, or being environmentally friendly, or using your own grocery bags, or recycling,
going green—it
wasn't a big thing. It really wasn't. And so I remember taking my bags to somebody in. She was a sales rep in San Francisco, and I walked, you know, walked into her showroom, and I showed her the bags, and she said, "These aren't designer, love. This is a designer product," and showed me a table mat. And I actually know the brand, and it's actually a very, very nice brand. And yes, it is designer, but I'd say I'm probably on par with them. But I just remember just thinking, okay, well, yeah, you can't see the potential in this product. I'll just keep door knocking. And it probably took me about a year before I really got any sort of sales in the USA.
Right. Wow. Okay. So let me stop you there for a second. There's so many amazing things going on right now. So I love the fact that you said, first of all, you know, there's a silver lining. I think yours was so apt because I remember this quote, I think I read somewhere, or I don't remember where, but it says, when a door closes, find creative ways to find the windows. Mm. And you actually did that. You found a creative way to let out that negativity, that depression, that, you know, postnatal depression, all of that stuff out. So that's amazing. I think that's a great step to really knowing yourself and taking that step. That's awesome. Belinda, have you heard John Lee Dumas?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So JLD, he's an amazing guy. I'm in one of his groups and he's an awesome mentor. And I remember he talks a lot about the baby effect. Was that something that you went through where, you know, when you have a baby and you're just like, okay, I don't want to go back to work. I'm just going to find a way to make this work, you know, where you're just like, you have a baby and you just, your life changes completely. Yeah. I think, you know, that was the first thing that came to my mind. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's such a, you know, perfect example of a baby effect.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Awesome.
And I suppose you can say that about the business as well, because you nurture something. You know, when you've got this creative idea at its infancy, you would do anything to look after that and nurture it. And, you know, you give it the most time that you can. And, you know, it's so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Let me ask you. So you made this one day, you're sitting in your house and you're making all these really nice bags. And what made you decide to even come to the US and say, you know what, let me even try and see, especially like you said, that time it wasn't really like it is today, right? Now everything is go green and we're all trying. And even in a place like Houston, which is not very green, you know, unlike Austin is another place in Texas and they are so strict about this is where you put all your recycling and this is what you do. And Houston is like, all right, it doesn't matter. Just do whatever you want. But, you know, we're getting there. But what made you take that step even to say, I believe in my product so much that I'm going to go out on a limb and go to the US and even find some buyers there?
Because I was actually already in Canada, Singapore, Hong Kong, and quite a few countries in Europe. I got there very fast.
So tell me about that. How did you get outside of Australia?
Well, basically, we have a government organization called Australian Trade Commission, or Austrade. And with their assistance, I found a distributor in Canada. And Canada and Australia are very, very similar in their mindset. They've got the same sort of population. And both countries were taking on the environmental aspect of the environmentalism as a kind of at the same time. And so I identified with Canada and I thought, right, okay, I did a bit of research and basically I had no money. And I knew that I needed to get a distributor order so I could fund my own production run for my own country. So that's how I actually did it. A lot of people would sort of shake their heads and go, well, that's not the way to do it. But that is the way that I did it. And sure. Would I do the same way again? Probably, or maybe not. Maybe not now, but now mm-hmm. that I know what I know now. Mm-hmm. But back then, there weren't crowdfunding mm-hmm. sites. I mean, we're talking about internet sites. It's right. only the large companies had internet sites. I can remember someone saying, I think you should have an internet site. And I looked at them and went, really, do I? So, I mean, you know, and it's hard to think, but back in 2004, it really was that. So I ended up with a Canadian distributor who placed their first order. And with the deposit of that order, I was actually able to also put the deposit of my order together as well. Mm-hmm. And I'd also researched manufacturing in China. And so I'd spent mm-hmm. hours and hours and hours researching on what information I could get back then. And I'm assuming there was Google around back then, but there wasn't the resources that we did have. And I remember being on the telephone a lot, just talking to a lot of people. And that was basically how I learned how to do it. I was very, very self-taught. I made a lot of mistakes along the way. And that's probably why I do what I do now, so people don't make the same mistakes. Anyway, wow. I basically was able to afford my first production run. So I put an ad in a paper in the newspaper. That was how we used to do it back then.
Right.
And I actually got a few retailers on board. Now, at the same time, back then, blogs had kind of started, or probably about a year later, blogs had started. And when blogs first started, they were really, you know, crafting, knitting, mommy blogs, that sort of thing, you know, what sort of formula for your baby, or that sort of, you know, that thing. People weren't really using blogs as a business tool so much as what they do now.
Right,
and
absolutely.
It is hard to imagine, but I remember we were able to get onto all these blogs because they were so hungry for product to review and that sort of thing. And it was very, very easy back then. So that's basically how I got it. I got it out onto the name out onto the streets. And I ended up doing a few trade shows in Europe and securing distributorship in a few European countries. But at the same time, I was constantly still trying to get into America. And I can remember people just saying to me, look, you know, we don't need these. We have people in the supermarkets that pack our own groceries, that pack our groceries for us. And it was just constant door knocking. But I just knew that I just didn't have to give up.
So what made you keep going? Like, what made you say, okay, I'm not going to give up and I'm just going to keep knocking on doors until one opens?
America has, I don't know, 300 million people in it.
Yes, yes. Yes, I like that.
Someone just said to me once, if you can secure the Californian market, mm-hmm. it's basically going to be much larger than the whole of Australia. And I kind of knew that it would be. I don't know. There was just this inbuilt thing inside me that said, you know, just keep going. Just don't worry about what people say. Just keep going.
Neat. So when did you get your first break?
When a journalist coined the phrase going green. And it really did happen. It happened in about 2008. So we'd already done one trade show in the New York Fair, and I can remember we did 35 orders and we thought we had done so well. And I had stock, which was in a 3PL third party logistics center. And so, and 6 months later, we did the next New York Fair. And within that time, a journalist had coined the phrase going green, and we were six deep at our booth.
Wow.
Yeah. And it just mushroomed from there. It just really mushroomed. And yeah.
Neat. That's awesome. That's great. That's an awesome story.
Yeah.
And how did you get, let me ask you this. I know there's some celebrities and stuff with pictures with your EnviroSax. And how did you get them? Was it something that happened organically or it was just, it?
It happened organically. All the shots that you can see on the website where Jessica Alba, Sarah Jessica Parker, Justin Timberlake, all those people actually with the bags, Malia Obama, you know, just the people who are actually carrying the bags and going about their business. I don't know how they got them. They just, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. I certainly didn't give them to them. I would give them as many as they wanted, but it just basically happened organically.
Nice. That's awesome. That's awesome. So you got these and you're getting these orders. So you went back to Australia then?
Yeah, I set up an office in San Diego, mm-hmm. and then it was basically managed from we had management in San Diego and mm-hmm. we looked after it from Australia.
Nice. And at this point, were you sourcing it from China?
Yes, I did. And I actually did this right from the very beginning. When I first made my samples in Australia, they actually came out at being about $35 each. And I knew that there was no way that I would be able to sell something that was going to replace a shopping bag mm-hmm. It would have to have retailed for something like $100 to even be able to, or, you know, between $70 to $100 to be able to sort of make a decent product, profit. So I actually started researching right from the very beginning, manufacturing in China. Now, there's something else that I need to tell you about myself as well. At the time when I started this company, I was living, or this business, I was living in a house which was entirely off the grid. We were only on solar panels. We only drank rainwater. We weren't on town supply water. And we also had a biocycle for all of our wastewater as well, which in turn watered the garden. So the environmentalism concept for me was very, very important. When I researched where I was going to get these made in China, it was so important that where I had them made, they followed environmental principles. So it went right from the very beginning when we would get our samples from China, we'd send them to the CSIRO in Australia and actually have them tested for heavy metals and make sure that what we were actually doing was correct and that, you know, that we weren't having the wool pulled over our eyes, so to speak, in China and that we, you know, that we were following the environmental principles.
Right, right. Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about Belluco.
Right.
So I guess this originated from your sourcing from China, right?
That's correct.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. So about 10 years into EnviroSax, I basically realized, I'm not going to sugarcoat my journey as an entrepreneur. Like so many people expect that they need to be wonderful on all aspects. But the one part I didn't enjoy about running the company, I lost my initial passion, which was the designing and actually getting in and doing the production. And suddenly I was managing the company. And to be honest, it just wasn't me. Mm-hmm. One piece of advice that I would give people, that you talk about finding your niche customer, mm-hmm. your niche audience, but you also have to find the niche which is perfect for yourself as well. And if you're not happy doing what you're doing, you'll lose your spark.
Right, right.
You know, over a 2-year period, I started to license out the main territories with EnviroSax. So I licensed out China. I've licensed out China, Brazil, Japan, USA, Canada, and Australia. And everywhere else is still just working on a distributorship. And with that, I get an ongoing royalty. So what I've managed to do is to exit myself out of a business and still retain an income.
That's neat. So let's talk about that a little bit. I think that's really interesting. So I completely get it, because I think that, like you said, if you don't have that passion that you started with, I mean, if it gets lost at some point or the other, you know, it's really important to carry on for sure. And I guess that's a great way to pivot your businesses. So what made you not think about, you know, saying, okay, this is going great and let me try another product? Or, you know, what made you completely shift from really making a product to consulting?
Well, probably about a year before I made the decision, I had a lot of people come to me and say, look, you know, can you help us? Can you help me? I want to get this produced in China. How did you do it? How did you get into America? How did you do this? How did you do that?
So and it basically originated from a need.
It did. I just started helping all these people. Mm-hmm. And I would use my staff because I have staff in China. I've always had from about 2009, I've had my production executive manager actually living in Shanghai, and he oversees all of the making of the EnviroSags. Mm-hmm. And we were working together for other clients more and more. And I was basically outsourcing my staff to other people. And I started to really enjoy it. And I thought, I'm really loving this. I'm loving helping people.
So, that's awesome.
I get people crying on the phone. I had a woman the other day, she had put all of her money into Chinese company that she hadn't done her due diligence on, and she had, and she put all this, given all this money to this factory. It's around about $40,000, and the container which arrived, which is basically how she was going to recoup her money and make a profit, and I think she had borrowed all this money as well. It was full of product that she just could not sell.
Oh no.
And I hear horror stories like this all the time. And I love just helping people, just helping them, point them in the right direction, overcome, because it's culturally, it is not the same. Getting an item, a product made in China is not the same as going down the road and finding a local manufacturer. It is entirely different. And part of that difference is the relationship building. And because I've been back and forth to China then since probably, well, going on 10 years. Well, it's now over 10 years. It's now going on 11 or 12 years. I've built up some really important relationships, and relationships in China are so important. I'm actually just releasing my blog at the moment, and so by the time this goes to air, all this will actually be on my blog, but I'm actually doing a series on my blog called Manufacturing in China 101. And the first thing I tackle is the importance of a relationship with the person that you're going to conduct business with. So we talk about my inability to like managing a company, but one thing entrepreneurs do is they love talking to people. They love relationships.
Right.
So I am literally in my element.
I love that. And you know, I'll tell you, that story resonates so much with me because, you know, I have had brick and mortar retail stores, and there was a point when I was like, I'm done, you know, I don't want to stand there and have a conversation with my customer and, you know, do the day-to-day work. I did it for so long, I'm done with it. And it's amazing, isn't it, how things kind of fall in place? Because I started the podcast and now people come up to me and they contact me. They're like, oh, I have literally gotten clients from the podcast to help them with their stores or with their online businesses, right? So it's amazing how you can take your experience and your own, you know, nuts and bolts and kind of help other people put theirs in place. Yeah. I think it's quite amazing. I completely agree with you. And I think what you're doing, what you'd said about relationships also is very important, because now with so much crowdfunding happening, I think a lot of people want or are looking at China for their sourcing, you know? So I think what you're doing is so on the mark with the time right now.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, so many people just go there and they just don't understand how it all works. And I get so many emails saying, well, you know, what about this? What about this? What about that? And it really is so different. It really is so different. And I'm just really enjoying helping these people. But I am.
Awesome. So you should do, you're doing a blog. Maybe you should do like a course or something.
I'm actually thinking about doing it. I really am thinking about doing it. And I'm actually, by the time this does go live, I will have something up there that I'm just in the planning stages of it now, where people can just sort of log in and we can be the sounding board or we can walk them through the steps.
Exactly. And I think, you know, because with so many, you know, crowdfunding and so many people, I think that would be great. And for somebody to get like a 101 course to even know and to price their product, you know, that would be great. Neat. So Belinda, let's talk a little bit about entrepreneurship. So what skills do you think are really important for women entrepreneurs to have?
Well, one of the things that women generally have an amazing inbuilt intuition. You know, as the woman of the family, naturally we have this heightened sense as a natural protector for our offspring. And I would say to women entrepreneurs, we have a sixth sense and just use it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Use your gut and go for it. I think, you know, that's part of the persistence, right? Because like you did not give up because you probably had it in you to say, I'm just going to keep going.
Yeah, definitely. There is something else too that I really think that we are in a position to change the workplace culture where working mothers are concerned. With EnviroSax, I employed a lot of working mothers and I would let them start after school drop off and leave prior to school pickup. So they'd be working 6 hours with maybe half an hour lunch. The productivity I would get out of these women is would be the same as someone who is working an 8-hour day, you know. And we used to have things like, we call them trumpet and flute days, you know, that the end of the term where all the schools have their school concerts, which are right in the middle of the day. And well, they are in Australia anyway. So the building would basically be evacuated with all the parents going off to the various schools for the end of year concerts and, you know, and all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. Wonderful. And Belinda, if you could offer a first-time entrepreneur only one piece of advice, what would it be?
That would be frugal in your office spending. You know, acknowledge that the money earned is your money. Treat it like it's your hard-earned cash and spend it wisely.
That's neat. Yes, absolutely. And I think also, you know, on the flip side of it, I think a lot of women entrepreneurs that I've seen really have money blocks. You know, I think a lot of us either don't charge enough because we think, oh, you know, I need to give it my 200% and just charge whatever it needs to be 100%, right?
Yeah.
I think that's another big thing that I have seen also in entrepreneurs.
Yeah, definitely. And I was actually looking at that when I was looking at what other consultants are charging. And it is interesting. I think men actually charge more than women do.
They do, don't they? Yeah, we got to change that for sure. Awesome. And are you ready now for our lightning round?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. All right, Belinda. So what trophy would you want on your mantle?
Okay, so my kids tell me every day that I'm the best mum in the world. So that's already acknowledged. They're wonderful, you know, but I think I just want to get through life knowing that I've helped as many people along the way as possible. And to be honest, I don't really think I need the acknowledgement. I don't know. I'm just not a trophy person. I'm
right.
Sorry. I just want to know personally that I've done that. You know, I don't think I need to blow the trumpet.
Right. Awesome. And what is your guilty pleasure?
Okay, well, mine's lying in bed on a Saturday morning, having breakfast in bed and letting go of the need to do any housework whatsoever. Saturday morning is actually my relaxation time.
Neat. And I really like the part where you don't have to do any housework whatsoever.
No,
I want to have that every day, 7 days a week. Yes. And what are you currently reading?
Okay, well, I'm reading two books at the moment, and one of them is, I don't know if I told you, but I hold a community group helping single women, basically divorcees or recently divorcees and widows. It's kind of like a community group. And one book that I've got that I've been given to read to that can maybe help me in my community group is a book called Boundaries, and it's by Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend, and it's basically when to say yes and how to say no. And I'm actually finding it really, really good. I think you can get so much out of it for the workplace, for your own home life. You know, as entrepreneurs, women wear so many hats, and sometimes it's really hard to lay down certain boundaries. The other book that I am actually reading is a book that my 10-year-old and I read every night. She reads a chapter a night to me, and it's called Soon by an author called Morris Gleitzman. And it is nail-biting. It is so, it's sad, it's happy, it's funny, it's just brilliant. And I would thoroughly recommend this author for anyone who has children in the 10 to 13-year-old age bracket. I'm enjoying it a lot. We actually don't have television in our house. I switched off the ability to have television probably about 3 or 4 years ago. So we don't have any television in our house.
That is awesome. I think in today's day and age, yeah. Oh my gosh, how did you get any resistance from your kids?
Look, a little bit at the time, but I did it when they were around about 7 and 9. So it was very easy to sort of mold them to sort of do other things. My youngest is very artistic, and my older girls are an avid reader. So they end up doing other things. They really do. So, yeah.
You know, I love that because I am the kind of person who can totally do that. But I'm just, I don't know. Sometimes that's my television, my go-to thing, because I'm like, I need to work. I need some quiet. Here, guys. Here. Go. Let me put something on. Go watch it. And mommy can get like a 10-minute, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's inspiring. I think I'm definitely going to keep that in mind.
Yeah. I think once they get to a certain age, they find ways to entertain themselves. You know, music, social media, other things. So,
right.
Yeah.
Awesome. And what is your one productivity hack?
To get your kids to do the chores without asking.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And the reason why I say that is because it's taken me a long time to get to this. And I finally got to this where after dinner, I can just get up off the table and walk over and start pump out a couple of emails and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Neat. And what is your personal motto or advice?
Okay, so it's probably more of a rule, and I really encourage people to, or first time, well, anybody to follow this, because you just don't see it written anywhere. And mine is walk with integrity, talk with integrity, and think with integrity. Save the embellishments for the Christmas tree.
Ooh, okay. Yes. I like that.
You know, just be honest in all of your dealings and, you know, and you'll get along fine.
Neat. And save all the embellishments.
That was an after thing. That was an after thing.
I like that. Next time I hear somebody, you know, bragging for no rhyme or reason, I'll be like, wait, let's save that for Christmas. Neat. And last but not the least, what would you do differently if you were given another chance?
Okay, so I know it's really passe to say that I wouldn't do anything differently, and I probably wouldn't, because, you know, no matter what I've done, it's, you know, made me the person I am. But I do have one daydream, and I am a Formula One racing car driver.
Wow.
I would love to be a racing car driver.
Really? Awesome. Have you ever tried it?
No, but I'm teaching my son to drive, and I've actually bought him a manual car because I want him to learn on a manual. Is that what I call it? In America, do you call it a manual car as opposed to an automatic?
Yes, I believe so. I know in India it's called manual, and we learned on a manual car when we were young.
Yeah.
But so, I love automatic, though. I don't have to think.
Well, I love a manual car, you know, just being. And so I'm actually teaching my son to drive, and I've actually ditched my lovely, heavy door clunking, you know, nice, comfortable, you know, automatic car which still sits in the garage, and I'm driving his manual car because I'm just really enjoying it.
Awesome. So does it give you like a sense of speed?
And changing the gears and having the control on the car. There's a very windy road that I drive over, and there's hardly any cars on it, and I, you know.
Wonderful. Awesome, Belinda. Thank you so much. We had such a great time. And before we let you go, tell us what is the best way to reach you.
Okay. So on my website, which is belluco.com, which is BELLOUCO.com. And that will also lead you through to my Facebook, blog, and any other social media.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Belinda, for coming on.
Hey, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. Bye.
So that, my friends, was Belinda Coker. Be sure to link up with her on social media. All of her links are on the show notes page at www.womanpreneursuccess.com/36. You can link up with me on Facebook at Smita Singh and Womanpreneur Success. And don't forget to go on our website, www.womanpreneursuccess.com, and get our free Womanpreneur Success 7-Day Jumpstart Kit. It'll really help you if you're stuck or just starting out. Once again, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And oh, by the way, we are now on Google Play. So yay, another new platform for podcasts. It's exciting. And thank you so much for letting me hang out in your earbuds. Ciao.
This concludes another episode of Womanpreneur Strategies for Success. Be sure to visit us at womanpreneursuccess.com so you don't miss any of our tips from some of the industry's leading entrepreneurs, investors, and business owners. Remember, you've got the will. Let us help you find the way. Until next time.